And I especially want to begin by thanking all of the people who helped to plan and lead our Sunday services during my absence. Our worship leaders over the past four Sundays were Herms Fisher, Harry Perkheiser, Mike Bose, Lori Goodman. Lori also leading the joys and concerns each Sunday. I want to thank in particular Arthur Rublinger for being our minister on call for January, for his sermon on January the 7th. Our other sermon speakers, as those of you who are here know, are Reverend Barbara Kamen, Bruce Taylor, and Reverend Lee Page. And I'm grateful to all of them as well. Well, prior to my departure then, I had a few meetings with the worship leaders to get things all properly planned and in place. I left some worship materials, readings and such for their use if they wish to use them. I contacted the speakers to make sure they knew which Sundays they were on and to get their sermon titles for the newsletter. And then I rechecked everything with the worship leaders again. I like to think of myself as a pretty easygoing guy, but I can get downright compulsive at times. I just wanted to make sure everything was securely nailed down before disappearing for a few weeks. And no sooner do I get back than I offer up a sermon with the title, "Sure Thing Will Always Let You Down." I do it knowing that those who were entrusted with leading our Sunday services didn't let anybody down. From all the reports I get, they did an excellent job. Actually, the sermon title is taken from a line from a poem by Rick Baskin, one of the many that he's written. As many of you know, I spent the last month working on a book about his 40-plus year career as a Unitarian Universalist minister, troubadour, and speaking poet. He and I got the idea for this about a year and a half ago when he was here. He did a presentation here at our Sunday service and another appearance in the afternoon as part of a New England tour that he was on then. To give you an update, I've got one chapter left to write for what will be 11 chapters altogether. So I spent most of my time just sitting in front of my word processor, and then I spent a few days, about a week and a half ago, with Rick and his wife, Billy Barbara, at their home in Carmel, California, and we worked our way through the chapters that I had written at that point. The most poignant chapter is the one I find the most poignant anyway, is the one we have titled, "The Ministry for Which I've Been Preparing All My Life." It covers the time from February of 1999 when Rick was first diagnosed with what is now determined to be terminal prostate cancer up to the present. So if you may remember, he read a few of what he himself calls his cancer poems when he was here. And the ministry in this title, to which he refers, is about his involvement with a variety of prostate cancer survivor groups and organizations on whose behalf he has made numerous appearances over the past 6-7 years, and to the online, both the internet line and the telephone line, conversations and counseling talks he has had with fellow survivors and battlers, the great majority of whom he has never met in person. This is what Rick calls the ministry for which I've been preparing all my life. But I have to say, it has been a transforming experience for me just to learn about and to write about this phase of his life. For at some point in my writing, I realized I wasn't just recounting someone else's story. Important as that story is, and as much as it needs to be preserved, which is why we're doing this. But I realized that somewhere along the line, I was also attempting to come to terms with how I, perhaps by extension, how all of us, deal with many of life's uncertainties, ultimate uncertainties. Indulge me in a side note here for just a moment. In the past couple of weeks, as I was pulling these manuscripts of this particular chapter together, I learned that my longtime friend and colleague in the UU ministry, one of our premier ministers, authors, and spokespersons for liberal religion in general, the Reverend Forrest Church of New York City's All Souls Unitarian Church, I learned that Forrest is being treated for esophageal cancer. He and I come within a few years of being the same age. And up until a few months ago, I'm sure Forrest was planning on taking his very fruitful ministry and writing career into retirement, Continuing to write and speak and staying on course of one of our major and more articulate proponents of liberal religion. And now that's all a matter of uncertainty. So between working with Rip and seeing what's happened to Forrest, two of my union ministerial colleagues, well, saying goes. It does give one pause. And it certainly brings into very clear focus this matter of how we meaningfully live in the face of uncertainty. As for Rick, he seems to be able, most of the time anyway, to be downright jocular about this kind of uncertainty. One of the things I did when I was out his way was to meet with a few people at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Carmel, a place called the Union Church of the Monterey Peninsula. It's where Rick and Billy Barber had been members for most of their lives. And I asked them if they could host a publication party for this book and for Rick and me about a year from now when we planned to have it out. They were very happy to do so. So I relayed all this information to Rick the next day when I saw one of our working sessions, and his rather rueful response was, "Well, I guess this means I have to live another year." He said this, knowing, of course, that ultimately it's not up to him, and certainly it's not up to me, whether he lives another year or not. But we proceed on this project, we work on it as if he will. Well, to move us along now, I'd like to read the entire poem from which I took the lines for today's sermon. The poem is called A Word for Survival. A Word for Survival. And Rick dedicates it to a fellow cancer battler he met along the way, Mr. William Hoyt, a man whose own battle has now ended. And the word for survival towards which this poem aims, as you'll see when I read it, is one that is coined as spiritude. Here's the whole thing. The man who coined the word had a terminal disease. A realist who knew that language strengthens, heals, and frees. Fear, the silent assassin, will bring you to your knees, while faith can pull Excalibur from stubborn stones with ease. The outcome of any illness is never absolute. No matter what the odds are, the end is always moot. It's only in uncertainty that true hope can be found. And you can bet a sure thing will always let you down. He thought the big sea monster with spunk and attitude, another cockeyed optimist, you should not. So like the fallen colors, I have taken up his word and I've shouted from the hilltop till the echo can be heard. He was no Pollyanna, his word no platitude. To things considered sacred, he could be abrupt and rude. In the present day vernacular, he was a righteous dude. Let's hear it for the man who coined the word spiritude. Okay, I want you to take that word spiritude and store it up there in your hard drive for a while, and we'll put it back on the screen a little later. I have definitely been spending too much time over these past 2 weeks. Okay, it's only in uncertainty that true hope can be found, and you can bet a sure thing we'll always let you down. How about if I round up the usual disclaimers first? Yeah, of course. We all have to have what I would call operational certainties in place just to get us from one day to the next. When our service and coffee hour is over today, I am reasonably certain that I will get in the same car that I drove down here, that I'll drive back over the same streets that got me here, go back to the same house in which I lived for nearly 18 years, where my wife of 29 years will be, and later today I will watch the Super Bowl as I think I have done for almost all of the past 41 years. Certainties. And the Indianapolis Colts will win. I'm not so certain about that one, but you get where I'm going. We would not be able to function, in fact, if we woke up every morning to nothing but a maze and a haze and a mishmash of uncertainty. We know also, however, that even our operational certainties, as I call them, can get kicked out from under us at times. And they do that in ways that can range from the merely inconvenient all the way to the painful and tragic and devastating. Indeed, it is the sudden, unexpected loss, the crisis, the painful turn of events that remind us of just how fragile our operational certainties are. A horrible loss of life and property in Central Florida due to severe storms and tornadoes over the past few days is but one example of this. Many people in that area went to bed on Thursday night in their houses, just as every one of us do. The next day, some of those houses were no longer there. Some of them were no longer there. But fragile or not, we have to have these operational certainties in place just in order to make it through the day. So where then is the truth, which I believe is there, in Rick's line that it's only in uncertainty that true hope can be found? The line, really, is about believing. You have the resources, both within you and from beyond you, to deal with the kinds of uncertainties that are a part of the human condition itself. The truth of the line is especially found in life's ultimate uncertainty. The uncertainty about what it means to lose one's life becomes real. But the line speaks to much more than just dealing with a cancer diagnosis or some other such diagnosis as that. It's really about the attitude. It's about the stance by which you and which I walk through life. On this note, let me offer you one of my favorite pieces of personal scripture. I've probably used it before, but I hope it will illustrate this point. I take this from a book that was published over 30 years ago by the philosopher, theologian, and therapist Sam Keen. The book's called To a Dancing God. I first read this little passage way back when, Billy Joel's well-known words, "I wore a younger man's clothes," and it's stayed with me ever since. Sam Keen. I remember an old cartoon. Sylvester the cat is running away from his ancient enemy, the bulldog. Suddenly he sees that his only way of escape is across a pond. Without hesitating, he runs on the water. So long as he remains unanxious, a lily pad arises to meet each of his advancing feet a split second before he would otherwise sink in the water. Suddenly, he becomes alarmed. For although his feet have found support for the journey so far, he can see no visible means of support for the remainder of the trip across the pond. The moment he begins to worry about whether the next lily pad will appear on schedule, he sinks into the water, and the bulldog stands on the shore and laughs. Dr. Keen then asks, "When I cease asking for guarantees that my feet will find secure ground, support appears for my advancing steps. The trick is to stop demanding certainty and trust in the ability of the self to respond creatively to whatever happens. You can't be graceful looking at your feet. Trust the happenings." And then he shifts into theology. I define this position as trustful agnosticism. I accept my life as a gift to be enjoyed responsibly, but I remain ignorant about its ultimate context. I aspire to trust myself and trust the happenings which interweave with my energies to form an incarnate person. And then he concludes, "I'm not uncomfortable saying that my trust in the ultimate context of my life is vested in God, provided the word God is not used more than once a year and is then handled like the Ark of the Covenant." Now, that last line, Keen is actually referring to an ancient Hebrew practice and precept, wherein their name for God, Yahweh, was only to be spoken at a special observance around the Ark of the Covenant and only once a year, so as to not dumb down the word. Not a bad idea. This is why I tend to shy away from God talk myself. I do believe in a power or a presence that is greater than myself, which I don't mind calling God. But the word itself, in my mind, has become so stretched and so trivialized that I prefer to keep it to myself and only carefully bring it out on certain occasions. That's just me. You do with it as you like. Well, this trustful agnosticism, as Dr. King describes it, pretty much describes my life stance at this point in my life. It does provide me the true hope that is found in uncertainty. And I'll take it one step further. I'll say that trustful agnosticism is my faith stance at this point in my life. It is the way in which I live by faith. Ironic as that may sound. For to live by faith is not the same thing as living with certainty. In fact, it is exactly the opposite. And those who equate faith with certainty, I would say, are self-deluded. And besides that, if you have certainty, why do you need faith? For faith, as I see it, and as Sam Keen offers it, is a choice to believe certain things about yourself, about others, about your world, and about whoever, whatever you may conceive ultimate reality to be. It is the assumptions, great and small, that you choose to live by. That's your faith. It is the choices you make in the face of all that is unknown, mysterious, or unknowable about life. The life that you are living, and the life of the universe in which you live. It is the choice, for choices made with the full acknowledgement of uncertainty and doubt. Faith is the choice to live as if certain things are so, in the absence of sure knowledge, in the absence of the sure thing that very well may let you down. They said earlier, Rick and I continue to work on this book as if he will be alive a year from now, in order to celebrate its publication. And trust, by the same token, is the choice to live as if certain assurances are in place, in the face of the possibility that they may not always and ever be there. Let me go back to the imagery of the old, that cartoon again. Remember, it is when Sylvester the cat looks for the sure thing of the lily pad that he gets let down into the water. Which is to say, when he loses his faith. So I would say living by the faith of trustful agnosticism means walking on one's life journey with your eyes ahead, believing the lily pads will be there, and or believing in your ability to create lily pads when they run scarce. This is the kind of faith that is referred to in the poem I read earlier with these lines. Fear the silent assassin. Fear the silent assassin will bring you to your knees, while faith can pull its scalpel from stubborn stones with ease. Now that I'm back in that poem, A Word for Survival, I'll use that to close. The word for survival, as you may remember, was spiritual. Now you can put it back on your screen. The word is an amalgam of two words, spirit and attitude. Spiritual, not bad. It is what I also take this trustful agnosticism that I'm talking about to be. Spiritual. A trusting attitude towards life, guided by the spirit. Call it the human spirit, the life spirit, the spirit of the universe, the spirit of God, whatever feels most important to you. And most authentic to you. For this indeed is one of the things that we are about. That is to say, encouragement. You, each one of you, to find and to live out your personal authenticity. And I am sure that each of us can do that. Let's sing together number 86, Blessed Spirit of My Life.